Hi, I'm La.
I'm Ashley.
And I'm Kathy.
And we are the Better Than Seven Sons podcast, where we get real about our experiences as Hmong American Christian women. Welcome to our last episode of season two. It's been a long season for us. This season was not what we expected. We didn't do everything that we had planned, and we had change our plans multiple times as we process and reflected on events that were happening. So for this last episode, we decided we're going to do a Q&A. So we asked our listeners to submit some questions that they might have for us related to any of our previous episodes, or if they have any questions that they want to know about us. We received a lot of great questions, and most of these questions could probably all be their own episodes, but we're just going to go through some of them and just maybe offer some of our thoughts that we currently have on them. Due to the limited time that we have, we won't be able to answer all the questions, so we just selected a couple of them to talk about. Yeah, so are you guys ready to just get started? We're just going to do this and we'll see how it goes.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's start with maybe like an easy question. People did ask us just some questions about us. So one of the questions is, what are some of your hobbies? I don't know if we ever really talked about any of our hobbies that much, or, you know, about fun stuff that we do. So yeah, what are just some of the hobbies that you're doing?
Well, I love YouTube. I watch too much YouTube. So that's one of my hobbies. I particularly love learning on YouTube, like fun things here and there. Because I didn't learn how to do bantao when I was younger, I started YouTubing like people like who do bantao and like techniques and stuff. Like, oh, this is so interesting. So I've been learning on YouTube, but I've also been doing learning how to do bantao, and I have a goal of sometime in my lifetime making Hmong clothes. Yeah, and with that, I've been like doing a lot of sewing. Also, just like really like building things. So, I got a 3D printer for Christmas, and so I like spent time building that. I also just haven't really printed anything yet because I think I'm too scared. I don't know why, but it's really intimidating because I don't think I know what I want to print yet. And then the last thing I kind of do that I started to do since the pandemic is just play lots of video games.
Nice.
Just like fun video games like Animal Crossing, and I play this cat one. It's called Cat Quest. It's very interesting. Yeah, I don't know how to, it's like a story mode type thing. So, and you fight dogs. So basically that's it.
Wow, interesting. I like baking and cooking, trying different recipes, or just baking the things that I normally do. I like running, painting. I love to sing, even though I don't think I have the best voice. I still just love to sing. I think it's something that runs in my family. And I love watching sitcom reruns from the 90s and Grey's Anatomy.
One of my hobbies is photography. I've been doing that since college, something that I picked up and taught myself how to do. I do like to cook also, and then I photograph the food that I cook. My process is basically I cook dinner, and then I spend an hour photographing my food. So I have this, like, I set up the lighting, how I want to look, because I like to take like moody photography. I do all that, and then it'll be like 9 p.m. or something, and I'll finally eat my dinner. Yeah, I do enjoy doing that. The other hobby that I'm currently doing is probably a very typical one that a lot of people are doing, is collecting plants and taking care of my plants. I was one of those people who thought I couldn't take care of a plant, or felt like I was too busy to take care of plants, but now I make time for plants. So
nice.
Yeah, it's actually exciting. I feel like with the change in season and it being more of a growing season for plants, it's been fun to look forward to their growth this season. So those are my current hobbies right now. I feel like I'll pick up hobbies here and there, and I really like learning hobbies on my own. Like, I'm willing to do that. Mm-hmm. So I'll just, if something seems interesting to me, I'll be like, okay, I'm going to learn how to do it. And I'll just do it. And that'll just be my new hobby for a little while until I get bored. So
nice. That's totally me too.
Yeah, I know. Anyways, why don't we move on? So another question asks us about our college experience and what did we study? So what was college like for you? And tell us about what you studied.
I started out pursuing business when I went into undergrad, and in particular accounting, because I took an accounting class in high school and I liked it a lot. After the first semester, I quickly realized that business was not for me and that I did not enjoy trying to understand that field. And so I don't think I declared my major until like my third year of undergrad, and I studied psychology. And so I wanted to pursue it because I thought about becoming a counselor or a therapist. And if you know me, you know that I'm passionate and I care a lot about the well-being of just people in general, but also just like relationships and family dynamics. And so I initially wanted to go to grad school too and to get my master's or maybe even PhD in psychology. But that obviously changed. Because we're in college ministry right now. And I think I've used all the things that I learned. And so I don't think it went to waste or anything. And I really loved my college experience. Like, I felt like I learned a lot in my classes and I developed a lot of really good relationships in college that I still have till this day. And I also grew exponentially in my faith. And I think that was when I really took hold of trying to understand faith for myself and not just because I grew up in the church or my parents are Christians. It was when I really explored and discovered and really owned up to my faith. So I really, really enjoyed my college experience.
Yeah, for me, I studied engineering mechanics. So it's not mechanical engineering, it's engineering mechanics. And it's a mixture of mechanical engineering and aerospace engineering. So now I went to UW-Madison. The reason why I did engineering is I loved innovation. I loved like building things. Comes out of my crafts and hobbies sometimes, so I still channel a lot of that. I love the research, the brainstorming, the trying it out, going back to the drawing board and like making it better. So in my college experience, like my studies, I enjoyed it and I loved it, but it was also it was a lot. Being an engineer is not for the faint of heart. So I wrestled a lot with academics. I wasn't the best student. I was pretty okay, like, getting, like, C's and B's. And, passing was just enough for me. I just wanted the degree. But I loved what I did. It was just the pacing of school was just a lot. And so, and I was also trying to figure out my life, figure out who I am. And so, like, all of that. And, like, being in social groups, it was just like all together. One of my pains of college is that like I had a lot of financial security issues. Like I had to support myself. So threw all that in the mix and I was just like balancing a lot of things. So that's kind of like my college experience. But I grew a lot in my faith. I grew a lot just trusting God. From my background, I've always been independent. So it was actually opposite. Like most people go to college like, yeah, I'm independent, I'm free. And I'm like, I actually became more dependent on God in like so many different ways. And so it was quite the opposite experience in my faith journey with God in my college years. And it's impacted me today. And it's also partly why I can do what I do in college ministry too. So, yeah.
I studied biology when I was in college. When I went into college, I wanted to study everything. I wanted to study history. I wanted to do journalism. What was the other thing I wanted to do? There was something else. It was math and science. I don't know. Somehow I ended up with biology, which I really enjoyed a lot. And it was an interesting experience because at that time, I would meet people who didn't think I could be a scientist because I was a Christian. And so it did make me think a lot about my faith and what I believed. And it was really helpful to meet other Christian professors in the science field and to learn from them and to learn about their perspectives as well. So it was a good experience. I was a first generation college student. So I feel like college life, we had to navigate a lot on our own. Mm-hmm. I remember my family taking me to college when I was moving into my dorm, and they dropped me off and we unloaded all my stuff and they took off. They went home and I was like by myself. Yeah. I was like by myself. And I realized I was by myself. You know, like everybody else, their family stayed and spent the day with them and they explored the campus together. And, and I was like, I am like completely alone. And also what happened was I moved in early. Hmm. So my roommate wasn't there yet either. So it was just me and a couple of other girls on my floor. So I really felt alone. I admit I cried a lot those first couple of days. Hmm. And then I eventually became friends with some of the girls on my floor and the people moved in. And, you know, like I made friends and then pretty soon college was like another home for me. So they were good formative years for me too. I grew a lot in my relationship with God, met people, you know, with different experiences, different backgrounds and different perspectives. And that challenged me a lot about like what I believed and how I see and understand the world. I think I'm a better person because of a lot of my experiences in college. So I'm grateful for it. But yeah, college was hard too. I've always been a really good student, 4.0 GPA type of person, but college was like the first time I did poorly in like an exam, or I had a semester where I just wasn't doing really well in most of my classes, and that was really hard to face. Yeah, I think that like wrecked me, like my identity as like the smart girl. Suddenly I was like, oh, I'm not that smart, or I don't know a lot. So yeah, it really disciplined me to work hard and to really think about like, you know, what am I doing here and why am I here in college? So, yeah. All right. Well, why don't we go to the next question? What motivated you to start this podcast? If you want to know, you could listen to our first episode. We talk about that. I'll add to this question maybe for us, maybe so that we'll have something to answer. Are there any new motivations for you for starting this podcast? Or was there anything else that motivated you about this podcast that maybe you didn't share before that you want to share?
I also want to say it's our first episode of the first season.
Yes.
I don't think there's necessarily anything new. I just feel like the more we record episodes and the more comments that we received from people, I think it only affirmed what I shared in the first episode or what I felt when we initially started. So for me, it's continually a space for us to be us and to tell our stories, for us to be unfiltered, for us to be unapologetic about it, for us to be able to share and name the things that we've experiences, you know, so all the tensions and dynamics. And hopefully it's creating a space and giving permission to Hmong Christian women to be able to think about their own experiences and to start sharing their experiences, because we've said this a lot, like in the society that we live in with the cultural dynamics that we have to navigate, whether it's whiteness or patriarchy or all the trauma that we've experienced, oftentimes we need someone to name it for us in order for us to feel the quote unquote permission, for the lack of a better word, to feel or to be seen or to be heard or known. And it'll eventually give us the courage to speak up too. And so a handful of people have done that for me on my journey throughout the years. And I feel like this is one of the many ways that I could do that for others, is to create this space and to hopefully, as I'm being courageous and sharing a lot of vulnerable pieces of my journey, it'll help give others courage to do the same. So I think that's like, I don't know if that's necessarily new, but it's definitely affirming as we've continued to share and record.
I can't remember what motivated me to start, besides it being like kind of like a cool idea. And I'm like also not really sure what I feel like I had to offer to the Hmong woman experience too, or Christian experience too. And so the motivation for me is more of a journey. After each episode, I think I've realized that I have developed my own thoughts on a lot of the topics that we've talked about. And so if anything, this my new motivation is just kind of like, oh, like, what do I really think, right? Like the freedom to think what I want to think has been kind of my new motivation. And also just having like the boldness to and the courage to just like figure it out and wrestle with it. I can hear whatever other people are saying, right? But like, what do I think? Like, what are my words?
Yeah.
And so I never really saw it as like I have much to offer, but like, hey, this is just my thought, and I have lots of them. So, but yeah.
I don't think I shared this in our first episode, but maybe like my personal motivation was I just needed a space to talk and to let out my thoughts. So I have a blog that I like writing in it, but I also haven't written anything in a really long time just because I had so many thoughts, but I couldn't put it on paper. I couldn't like write it down. And so I decided, okay, finally I'll do a podcast. The other thing is I just feel like we need more Hmong women, especially Hmong Christian women, to take up space. Because anything related to Christianity that's on the internet or podcasts is just dominated by men. And if Hmong people are doing it, then it's obviously Hmong men who are talking about it.
Yeah.
There are like a bunch of podcasts by Hmong women out there, which are great, but there just aren't any that is able to speak into even our unique experience as Hmong Christian women. And so I felt like I wanted something that can maybe help bridge the gap between Hmong Christian women and everything else that we don't talk about in the church, I guess. I don't know. Yeah, I mean, I hoped that the podcast would be able to do that. So this next question asks us about the movie Raya and the Last Dragon. So we had a mini episode in our first season where we react to the news of the movie and had some initial thoughts. So now that the movie's out and we've all seen it, what are our thoughts? I think most people have seen it, but maybe I should give like a spoiler alert that we might, I don't know, we might spoil it just so you know. So if you haven't seen it, you can skip this part.
So I've actually watched it 5 times with a lot of different people, and I have a lot of thoughts. But the thing that really has continued to resonate with me is the theme of trust that is displayed and embodied throughout the entire movie, especially because I think as it relates to like being Southeast Asian American and the narratives that we inherited and we hold as children of refugees and immigrants from Southeast Asia. And so I think that being children and inheritors of people from war-torn countries, becoming enemies of one another, losing family members, being the only ones left, the burden of learning to hope and trust again after a lot of death and trauma and pain and betrayal, and just the trauma and survival mentality that is passed on to the next generation because of what happened to our parents and our grandparents and the history of that. I felt like that just really resonated with me and it hit me very deeply. The question that I am holding that I asked some of our Southeast Asian friends that we watched, a couple of us watched it with them last week, was what does it look like for us as Southeast Asian Americans to recall and reclaim our stories, knowing that there has been pain among our people and among one another? And how do we begin to come together to repair and reconcile the inherited trauma that we carry now that we are coming together in the U.S. and like, it's not the same as our parents and what our parents went through. And so that was the question that I proposed or I asked the group last weekend. And those are the things that like, I'm still wondering about and hit me very, very deeply. I also have a lot of criticism about it because it's Disney and it's, you know, but I will withhold that. For now.
Okay, well then I'm not gonna withhold it. My criticism is I think it was a beautiful picture and it was like I enjoyed seeing like the artist interpretation, but I'm also kind of sad because like in somewhere and I was like, oh, is that Hmong or is that Hmong, like is there something Hmong in here?
Yeah.
And so the representation is like definitely obviously certain like Southeast Asians, which is totally okay, but I'm like, man, again, like Southeast Asian is like a broad term.
Yeah.
So like that's probably the part that like is very sad. So in some ways, like, oh, like I can totally identify with the elements in the movie, but I was like, at the same time, I don't feel like I'm in the movie.
Yeah.
And so, and then I'm also kind of upset that the majority of the actors, actresses, and the music were all like mostly East Asian. So it just doesn't feel like fully holistic or authentic. And so it does make me question a lot of things, but I'm not going to go down that. But as opposed to the storyline, I liked it, but the ending is like questionable for me. As I sat with it, because I watched it twice, it made me realize that like the whole storyline is a Southeast Asian American story. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's a Southeast Asian American ideal.
Yeah.
Like only Southeast Asians in America could see themselves like coming together, like everyone at the end of like Raya when all the tribes come together. And it made me think about like, oh, what would like Southeast Asians in their homeland, like what would they think about this? They'd probably think like this is like absurd. Right? It's like I don't think Southeast Asians in Southeast Asia see them as a collective, like, oh yeah, we're Southeast Asians.
Yeah.
Right. And so this is definitely like a Southeast Asian American ideal. Well, I think, which is good because like Southeast Asian in America, like we have a unique story because we're in America.
Yeah.
So that made sense to me. But I don't know. I just have tension with it because as Southeast Asian Americans, we have that inherited trauma from like earlier generations in Southeast Asia, right? Because Southeast mm-hmm. Asia, we weren't really nice with each other sometimes.
Yeah.
So we bring that over to the US in America. Your parents have that. You're learned a certain thing. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, you do have to learn how to trust other Southeast Asians in America. So like that part I got, but I was like, there's more to it that Disney's not like addressing. And that's the part that I was wanting.
Because
the answer isn't just to hope and trust. Like, There's more work to be done. And so I did appreciate how Disney didn't make one person a bad guy, because I think it highlighted very well that like when everyone is in survival mode, it's hard to trust anyone.
Yeah.
And so I appreciated that part of like the story. And it's like, it's just complex. And that's, it is what it is.
Mm-hmm. I only watched it once. And after I watched it, it's like, oh, I don't think I'm ever gonna watch this again. It was a good storyline, and that's all I have to say about that. It was an awkward storyline for the context for Southeast Asians, I think. I felt some tensions about how it ended or how they fought this thing that they were fighting. I don't know. Sorry, I watched it once. I'm trying to like recall one.
It's called a dream.
Yeah. It was kind of strange for me, and it felt off for me. I can't name it right now because I watched it when it first came out, and I haven't really thought much about it since. So, that tells you how I really feel about it. But I agree with Ashley. Like, it is a visually appealing film. It is beautiful. I think it's good for kids to feel seen and represented. As an adult, it just wasn't the film for me that I would have wanted for Southeast Asians. But that's okay. Like, I think it's good for people who need it. It was very triggering throughout the whole film that many of the characters and some major characters were East Asian. Mm-hmm. I know that Asian Americans are fighting for more roles for themselves, but there's that, and there just seems like there's this internal Asian American narrative that we're trying to, like, figure out.
Yeah.
And this triggered that for me.
Yeah.
Because it seemed like, oh, if you're Asian, we could just put you on the Southeast Asian film.
Yeah.
Whereas for us, a lot of Southeast Asians are still fighting to be seen with the Asian Americans. Mm-hmm. So that was really triggering for me. And I felt a lot of sadness, I think, throughout the film when I was watching it. Mm-hmm. And it was like, I feel sad, not because of the storyline, but just because this film exists.
Yeah.
Where I am, that's how I felt about the film. Actually, I do agree with you about how the storyline seems strange because we don't know if Southeast Asians really see themselves as a group. So it did feel very American, like this American idea that was put onto Southeast Asia. After you said that too, I did wonder, this should have been an Asian American film about Asian Americans in the US. Asian Americans were figuring out how much we belong, right, to the Asian American community. Mm-hmm. and not everybody is viewed as Asian American.
Yeah.
Like, some people don't think Southeast Asians are Asians. Yeah. Or some people don't think South Asians are Asians, right? You know? So it almost seemed like, oh, this could have been a good movie to talk about Asian Americans.
I was on a Clubhouse room shortly after it was released, and it was a Southeast Asian Clubhouse, and they were saying how even in an animated Southeast Asian film that was supposed to be for Southeast Asians or represent us, like, a lot of people voiced that we are still invisible in a movie that was supposed to be by us and for us because a lot of the voice actors were East Asians. And that's why representation is very shallow still of a measurement when it comes to diversity and being seen and being heard.
Because it's a movie that's very surfacey with culture that basically we just gave all our money to Disney. So the only person who really benefited from this is Disney.
Yep.
Anyways. Let's move on. We can probably talk about this some more. Yeah. But overall, I don't think people shouldn't watch it. You know, like, enjoy it for what it is. Okay, so this is like an awkward transition.
We're going to talk about serious stuff now.
We have more intense questions.
Yeah, we got a couple of questions that are that talk a little bit more about, like, feminism or being women, and are more about some of our personal experiences. So we'll start with this one. As a Western ideology, would we know what feminism is if we weren't born and or raised in the U.S. or another Western society? Do our mothers or grandmothers know about the feeling of feminism and having equal treatment, but ignore it based on how the culture or tradition has always been?
I like this question because this is kind of how, like, my thinking operates, like the absence of something, if something never happened. So if you were to imagine a world where, like, maybe we didn't, like, come overseas to another Western society, I think my answer would probably, I don't think so. I don't think we would have known what feminism is, like, because patriarchy is so embedded in the culture and just the way of living for a lot of Hmong people. And so exposure to feminism, I do think, is not only on the overseas experience, but it's a big factor to at least the Hmong experience. So I don't think so. But could have, like, yeah, probably. It's not impossible. And then I think the second part of the question is a fascinating one. It's, do our mothers and grandmothers know about the feeling of feminism or having equal treatment but ignored it based on culture and traditions? I think so. And I say that because I think we, at least, probably experienced feminism in different contexts. So anything outside of the Hmong context, they probably experienced, like, a level of agency and freedom, but then, like, code switch, right? Go back to patriarchy and just, like, do it because of culture and tradition. And traditions are really strong. And it's, traditions are the hardest things to change. And so, because, yeah, again, like, Hmong culture, even before, like, moving, being displaced, it was rooted in patriarchy. And so when you're not exposed to other things, there's not an alternative. So
I think I disagree in some parts with you, Ashley. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Or, like, I feel like my thoughts are the opposite of yours. So I don't think feminism is an ideology that's limited to the West, right? There's Asian feminism, you know, things like that. If we were isolated and never left our villages or the mountains, then maybe we don't know that much about feminism. But people are getting educated. Hmong people are. So I think they'll come across something, or maybe see something in film or movies or entertainment that addresses feminism in some ways or shows that in some ways. So I think eventually we will. We'll know about feminism. And then I do believe our mothers and grandmothers, they know about the feeling of feminism. They've experienced inequality and oppression. They may not vocalize it, but they have. I mean, I've definitely heard Hmong women talk in more private spaces mm-hmm. about how cruel Hmong men can be.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So they're not like, they're not blind to the way they're being treated. But I think they may not feel like they have the power to change culture or tradition. Like, I think a lot of Hmong women do feel powerless. And because I wonder if there's the tension of them feeling powerless, but also they also believe this, along with older Hmong men, that, like, I don't know, you don't change culture or tradition. Like, they're just so conservative about these things that that's the way things are, and that's why we keep doing it or we keep living this way. Mm-hmm. So, yes, they do feel oppression. I don't think they have the agency or the power to change that or feel like they do.
So these two questions, for me, goes back to, like, what is our understanding of feminism and how do we define it for ourselves? Because I agree with you a lot in that I don't think it's only a Western ideology. I think we talked about this in one of our first episodes about defining feminism and what does it mean for us. And I think for me, it goes back to, like, being treated as a human being and being treated equally. And so I feel like even if we weren't born and raised here, even if we were in the middle of nowhere, not colonized, not, you know, torn from, you know, our villages, like, I think that because of our culture, we know in our guts when we're not being treated equally or when something is wrong or when we're treated very wrongly and poorly. And so I think that it would still be a thing. I think that we probably would struggle to be able to name it and to share it because of how our culture is in the Hmong community. And so that answers the question of, do we think our mothers and grandmothers know the feeling? I think so. Because, again, I think we know it in our guts when we're treated poorly and when we're being wronged. And that's just how we're created. And so I think that just because we don't have the language or the frameworks, it doesn't mean that we don't know it. I think there's just been a lack of space to name it.
Going off of that, I know we've talked about the Hmong church and feminism, patriarchy, whatever. So this next question is sort of a follow-up to us and our experiences. And it says, would any of you consider becoming a member of a Hmong church again? Why or why not? What would you need in place for you to join one? I can answer first. I am open to becoming a member of a Hmong church again because there are just some things in a Hmong church that Hmong churches do well that is really hard to find other places. Mm. I feel like something I've heard from people, they think other churches are just better than Hmong churches, which isn't true. Like, there are very few churches out there that are much better than the Hmong church. I think all churches have their weaknesses, different weaknesses. And so the Hmong church is just different. So I'm not opposed to being part of the Hmong church again. I don't feel like I need to pursue that, though. I do believe there is some calling that is involved in choosing your church. So if I feel a clear calling to attend a Hmong church again, then I will. But in this season that I'm in, it doesn't seem like it's the best option for me. Just because I don't quite feel supported as a Hmong woman doing ministry and leadership. And so I don't think I'm in a right place to be in that kind of environment or that kind of community right now. What would I need to change? If the church started embracing more women and Hmong women leading and in ministry and being willing to talk about uncomfortable topics, then yeah, I think I would be willing to go back. I don't not like the Hmong church. I'm just as critical about the Hmong church as I am about many other churches. I try not to make it seem like, oh, like, other churches are just better than Hmong churches. Like, I think a lot of Hmong people have that kind of mentality, and I want to rebuke that because that's not true. Yep. So, but definitely, like, yeah, I've been hurt before by members of Hmong churches, and I've seen the way they've hurt, you know, other people that I care about. And I would need them to, I don't know, face those things for me to be open to going back. But as of right now, I don't feel like it's the right thing for me in the season that I'm in.
Yeah, for me, it's a most likely no. It's not impossible, but definitely right now, it's a no. And there's like multiple reasons. I do have baggage, so I'll be completely real about that. I do have baggage. I did come to faith in like Hmong church, Hmong community. And so, but as a biracial, as a woman, as a white and Hmong woman, I just feel like it just wasn't always completely for me. And for a time being, it was, with the possibility of like my family being more multicultural, I just have values of having them understand all who they are. I just feel like the context of the Hmong church is just not for me this time being. To serve in a Hmong church, again, it'd have to be a calling. I still feel like my giftings just don't have space in the Hmong church as well, for multiple reasons. But I'm not sad about it because like I grew up in the Hmong church, so I kind of feel like I kind of understand like what's valued and what's not. And so I just feel like that's just a kind of like reality check for me. Like, yeah, like I just know I might not like fit in. I also just like I feel like my personality is just not very I just feel like it doesn't fit. I'm not scared to speak up. And so in a place that is highly collective and does value tradition, I just acknowledge, and like hierarchy and authority, I just acknowledge that like, I just don't fit in that, and that's okay.
I am open to it. However, and this could lead to our next question that you'll probably ask La, but I think after 10 years of ministry, I was very hurt in trying to build relationships and bridge a gap with the Hmong church in a lot of different ways. And I know that we didn't do it perfectly either, but I think that that hurt me a lot. And it also took a lot out of me emotionally and mentally. And so if I'm honest, in this season, I just can't. It's just too hard. And I think I need a lot of healing and a lot of rest before I can even think about what I would need in place to join one. And so I don't, similar to you, La, I don't think there's anything wrong. Like, it's just different, you know, with the Hmong church. But I think because of my experience of ministry in the last 10 years, it's just, I think I'm still recovering, if I'm honest. So at this point, no.
Yeah, the next question asks, have you healed from your experiences and forgiven those who minimize your voice or prevented you from using your gifts to teach and share the gospel truth?
I mean, I can share right away because I alluded to it, but I think I've healed some, and I think that there are other parts that hasn't been healed. I work on trying to forgive because I think that it's too heavy of a pain to carry and to allow to dominate my life. And so I think I work on it through spiritual direction and through therapy a lot. But I think that it just takes time, and I think that it's a journey. And so, and I think that things keep happening. You know, there are things that, because we're still in ministry and because we work with college students and, you know, we've been doing this for years, we might not be seen as leaders in the Hmong church, but I had to come to terms that we are like known as Hmong leaders. And so we are asked to like speak on behalf of our people or like to do things. And we are in spaces, and then we start to experience things again, and then it triggers a lot of our years on ministry and the things that has caused us pain. And so I think it's hard because it doesn't go away, and it's a battle. And I don't think it'll ever go. I don't know if it'll ever go away. And I think I've come to terms with that. But similar to what I said earlier, I think I wonder for me if it's just like I need a few years of rest and a few years of of deep healing before I can figure out what is next or what ministry looks like or what my partnership and involvement with the Hmong church would look like, because it's just been too hard. My spirit is exhausted.
I have a hard time answering this question because I think healing and forgiveness is like not a one-time thing. And I think a lot of my baggage is actually just around mostly just male, Hmong male leadership. And mostly like just not being heard or feeling like they're not really listening. So one, I think, yes, there are some things I've healed from, because I feel like in that healing, I'm still able to like use my gifts and teach and share the gospel, which is like that second part of that question. So it hasn't stopped me from like doing the things I feel like God is calling me to do, from like the minimization of just my voice or just not being heard when things were voiced. And so have I fully forgiven? I don't know. It's hard when things happen again and again, and it does trigger that same thing again. So then I have to go back and like kind of relive it and like rework through it, right? And so I think it's just a process for me. So it's not a one and done thing. But yeah, does it like pain me, and does it burn when another Hmong male does something that like wasn't really helpful or to my past lived experience? No. Like, it re-triggers a lot of things. So I have to like go back, and then like there's something else that like maybe I need healing from. So I think it's just like a growing process, and it's just gonna be ongoing. It's not gonna be one and done thing. So yes, and not fully have I healed and forgiven.
I've done some forgiving. I try to have a posture of forgiving, because I don't want, or I want to be free from allowing other people hold me back from moving on or living.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So when you're just sick and tired of being angry at other people, you're like, it's like, okay, let's work through what does it look like for me to forgive. The difference is I've done some forgiving, but a lot of the people that I forgive aren't exactly people who come to me and admit that they've done something to hurt me and ask for forgiveness or repented or anything like that. So
yeah,
there isn't any real reconciliation that's happened.
Yeah.
Which is okay, I think. Just because, you can forgive people, but you don't have to be like friends with them. Like, that's sort of my relationship, I think, with these people. Not that I was friends with them in the first place, but... But, you know.
That's real.
I think I try to do that just so that I can focus on what I want to do and not be so focused on what people have done to me. I think there's still some like pain and even some resentment there. And a lot of these people who have done this to me, I don't trust them at all. I don't think I'm like, oh, I'm completely right and they're completely wrong or anything. Mm-hmm. But because they've silenced me, I just don't trust them as leaders or as people who minister to other people, because a lot of these people are ministers, people who minister to other people. So
yeah.
So I wouldn't trust them. I wouldn't refer people to them. But, I am open to reconciling if people want to reconcile and genuinely like repent and, want to work things out. Like, I think that's good. And I want us to be able to do that. So I'm open to doing that. But I've worked on it on my own, right? Because I needed my own healing so that I could actually do what it is that I'm trying to do. Like, do what it is that people kept me from doing.
And I think that we wouldn't be doing ministry if we didn't believe that, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think that's what's exhausting and tiring, is because it feels like for some reason we became the enemy or competition. Mm-hmm. And how did this come out to be? And it seems like it's only because we're women, mm-hmm. or because we didn't get a degree, it didn't go to this Bible college or whatever. And so I think that's what's hard, because it's not that we're not willing to forgive or we're not willing to reconcile. We're not like we don't want to heal. It's like that's kind of been our journey, and it just keeps happening.
Yeah. Well, why don't we just do one more question, because we're running out of time, or we're probably going longer than we usually do. But so this question is, what's the future among justice seekers look like?
There's a lot of good work that is happening that I've seen and witnessed in like my local community. And so I think like it's so awesome. I think maybe specific to Hmong Christians in terms of understanding justice or seeking justice, my personal thoughts, I think there's a lot of individual and collective work that we need to do. Mm-hmm. And I think, and it starts with understanding our story.
Yes.
Because we can't like understand justice and want to, if like we don't then remember where we came from and like how mm-hmm. we got here and how we participate in the justice work here. Because we can easily bandwagon off like Asian American justice or like other justice work, but mm-hmm. like authentically as a Hmong justice seeker, right, Christian, like we really do have to like ground ourselves. And like even like with Christianity too, that's another layer.
Yeah.
But like as a Hmong Christian justice seeker, you really have to ground yourself, because it's really with all the justice stuff that is out there, it's really easy to get swept away.
Yeah.
And to get fixated into something. So, and that's not like wrong if you really love the work you do and the passion. But like there has to be a grounding in the many layers, in your ethnicity, in the way that Hmong people are experience racism too, yep. right? Not as Asian Americans, as Asian Americans, as Southeast Asian Americans, right? So there's so many layers. So you have to like process that, and then also know what kind of justice work are you seeking, yeah. because that drives what you are motivated to pursue. And we can jump on the bandwagons. And that's completely okay. And if that's how you learn about like your story yourself, I think that's okay too. But also just remember to ground yourself, because I think also, and this is just with Asian American justice stuff too, we're bandwagoning off of like Black Lives Matter movement. But we had a lot of work that we needed to do. So we can't just take everything that movement has done and claim it and do the same thing, right?
Yeah.
Our story is different. Our experience yeah. of racism is different. And so there's nuances. And so, yeah.
I am hopeful for Hmong justice seekers for the future. And then, I do want to speak more specifically to Hmong Christian justice seekers. So I'm hopeful because, one, I think there are more Hmong Christians who are pursuing justice, right? Mm-hmm. They're becoming more aware, and they're learning, and they're speaking out on that. The second thing is, I have seen some people who might be less open to justice. I've seen like slight shifts in the way they think in a good way. Like they're not, you know, they're not quite there, but I've just seen some shifts lately. And so that makes me hopeful that maybe some Hmong Christians are listening more or rethinking maybe some things. It's very small though, I think. Like it's not like this major change, you know, but I think any movement is good. Any shift towards seeking justice for people is good. Right now, there is a lot of individual work that's happening. Like we function very individually.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we've collaborated with like maybe the wider Hmong community and things like on our own. But I do desire to see a Christian collaborative among Hmong people. Mm-hmm. So last year they started the Asian American Christian Collaborative. I think that's what it's called, which is good for what it wants to do. But it just, for me, it didn't feel like it was a good next step for Hmong people just because of our invisibility within the Asian American community. So I didn't think that was like a good next step for a lot of Hmong people. But it would have been nice to see maybe a Hmong Christian one, because I wonder if that would help legitimize what we're trying to speak up on. And because, like, I think trying to be prophetic, trying to be a justice seeker, it's just really lonely, especially in the church and in the Hmong church. Mm-hmm. And so I think we're stronger if we actually, like, got together and we're like, oh, who else cares about this? Let's, you know, let's collaborate. Let's support each other. It just seems like we don't get together, so we just feel like we're the only ones, but it's not true. There are other people too. So, we do have to do that. And honestly, like if we're willing to do the hard work of pursuing justice, we really need to do the hard work of figuring out our relationship with Christians, who other Hmong Christians who don't totally share our value for justice. Like, we have a responsibility to each other because we're a community. We both have this Christian label, even though some of us care more about justice than others, where we do need to like listen to each other, include them into what we're doing. And that's hard. It can be traumatizing sometimes or triggering, but justice work never was easy. We have to face all that hard stuff. So I hope that the future we can be more inclusive and be more attentive to, you know, why do people oppose this and how do I talk about justice in a way that is maybe going to help them to understand it better. Just because I think we try to get really loud. Nobody wants to listen to us if we just try to get loud about issues. But if we're able to actually see and listen to people and try to like see where they're coming from, I think maybe we could approach it better. I am hopeful though. And I do hope to see something form, like a movement form within the Hmong Christian Church.
I am cautiously hopeful for a lot of the reasons that you both shared. I 1,000% agree, Ashley, that we cannot start or be a part of the justice movement unless we understand our own stories, because then we end up co-opting other people's stories and it doesn't make sense because that is not our story. That is not who we are. And then we also end up doing more harm and damage than good. And that doesn't help justice. That doesn't help bring healing and wholeness. And so I think that the Hmong Christian community really do need to come together to understand what it means to be a Hmong Christian. I don't think we have had enough spaces to explore that and to understand that. And so we can't enter into conversations because we don't even know who we are. And we can't begin even imagining or acting upon it. And partnering with other people. And so we can't partner with other Asian Americans. We can't partner with the Black community because we don't even know who we are. And I think that there's also work that needs to be done within the Hmong community, among Christian and non-Christian. I think there has been a lot of justice work that is outside of the church that we need to also learn from, and we need to learn how to partner with. And so a lot of what you said earlier about partnering within the Hmong Christian community, I agree. And then I also would like to add, like, partnering with non-Christians who have been doing the work and who, like, have been asking all these questions. I don't think we do a good job of that. There's lots of layers and lots of reasons why. But I think that if we don't examine and have an honest conversation about the gaps or the barriers or the mishaps, then we can't even, we will do more damage than good. And so I'm cautiously hopeful because of all those things. If we can tackle all those things, come together and address it, yes, it'll be great. But if we don't, we will keep making mistakes and we will harm not only ourselves within our communities, but we will contribute to the injustice that is happening without realizing it.
Well, that is all the questions that we have for this. Thank you so much for submitting questions. Thank you for listening to us this season. We had fun this season. We had fun doing our mini episodes and just sharing stories. And then I think this was really good for us to just process together as a community. Mm-hmm. We're excited that we completed 2 seasons. I think we are excited to come back for another season. We're still figuring it out, so we don't have anything to share with you guys about future seasons, but definitely follow us on Instagram at BTSS Podcast if you want to stay up to date. That's where we'll post news. Yeah, thank you so much for listening this season, and we're just so grateful for all you guys.